Come be a part of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics with your host, Dr. Ed Holliday. Hear the voices of liberty speaking all across America. Doc Holliday provides thought-provoking interviews and commentary about the issues and actions that are afflicting this country and what we need to do to get America back on track. Get fired up. Get inspired. Get on board with Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right now.
Once again, that's the sound of rock cracking right here on Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You've got Ed Holliday here. I'm your host, and we welcome you to the show right here on WebTalkRadio.net. That's WebTalkRadio.net. You're listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, and that sound of rock splitting, that might be some people in the White House knocking up on the wall after those Benghazi hearings last week. A lot of things coming out. I've told you on this show, we're going to have Joshua Waller coming on. We're going to be talking about someone who's been on the West Bank, stays there half a year, knows the West Bank back and forth. He'll be coming up for a special interview as we look at the world and the way it revolves and what's going on in the Middle East right now, everything from Benghazi, Egypt, but what else on the West Bank, what they call the West Bank in Israel. Is it disputed land? We're going to talk to Joshua Waller and find out. I'll tell you a little bit more about him in just a few minutes. And also, I told you last week that Joshua Waller's great-great-great uncle wrote a book that was a bestseller right after the Civil War in the late 1860s. Very famous great-great uncle. So, and I'm going to tell you who it is in just a minute. Give you a minute to think about it. He wrote a book about the Holy Land. It became a bestseller at the time. I also got another question for you. I'm going to give you both these answers in a couple minutes. The other question is, guess what? If the Democrats take over the House in 2014, we know Nancy Pelosi will be elevated to Speaker of the House again. But you know, Barney Frank, former congressman from Massachusetts, he's no longer around. So who would be head of our House Finance Committee? Who would be the head? Who would be the chairperson of our House Finance Committee if the Democrats win back the House in 2014? I'll give you the answer. It is scary. Okay. Now, let me tell you about the show coming up. We're going to be talking about Benghazi. We could talk all day long. So many things coming out, but we're going to talk about Benghazi. And also, I'll get you prepared for this interview of Joshua Waller. It's a fantastic interview of something we don't hear much of. We always get news reporters and people all wrapped up in armor and gear talking about the West Bank, what's going on in the West Bank where there's disputed territory. Is it going to be a Palestinian state? What's going on there right outside of Jerusalem in Israel? And we're talking about that in today's show. You'll hear a perspective you won't hear anywhere else. And it's an exclusive right here, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. I hope last weekend everybody got a good Mother's Day gift for your mother and gave her a big hug, a big kiss, talked to her on the phone. Now, I'm going to play a song, and we're going to talk about Benghazi, and I'll give you the answer to those questions. Liar, liar, pants on fire. That's the castaways telling us about what is it like to hear a liar. Well, we've heard a lot of lies, and we're finding out what is truth and what is lies. Truth are consequences. Well, last week's Benghazi hearings at the committee house hearings on Benghazi, and we got to hear from Greg Hicks, and he was the acting ambassador once Ambassador Stevens was murdered, and they knew of his death. Then Greg Hicks was the acting ambassador, and he had a lot to tell us that we had not heard before. Why had we not heard it? Well, is it a cover-up? What do you call something when people don't want people to talk? I believe it's a cover-up. You won't hear that on the mainstream media, but We learned a lot. One thing we learned is we were lied to. This administration, not once or twice, but over and over, sent out top people. Of course, started with Susan Rice on the Sunday talk shows just 5 days after the September 11th attack on our embassy in Benghazi. What was that? What was that? Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, when she was running for president, seemed like she had something like an ad. Did she have an ad out, something about getting a call at 2 a.m.? No, it was 3 a.m. in the morning. But guess what? Greg Hicks talked to her at 2 a.m. in the morning and told her it was a terrorist attack. And then she was telling everybody it's about a video. It was about a video. Let's hear what Hillary said when she wanted to be president.
It's 3 a.m. and your children are safe and asleep. But there's a phone in the White House and it's ringing. Something's happening in the world. Your vote will decide who answers that call. Whether it's someone who already knows the world's leaders, knows the military, someone tested and ready to lead in a dangerous world. It's 3 a.m. and your children are safe and asleep. Who do you want answering the phone?
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
Maybe I should just pack up and go home.
Well, President Obama didn't just pack up and go home. He went ahead and he defeated Hillary Clinton and became president. And Hillary said she knew the military, she knew the world leaders. And what happened in Benghazi?
What difference at this point does it make?
2 o'clock in the morning. Maybe it was too early because it wasn't 3 o'clock in the morning. But
what difference at this point does it make?
We had assets in the area that could maybe saved at least two of these brave Americans' lives. The assets were not engaged.
What difference at this point does it make?
And we saw Americans die.
What difference at this point does it make?
Brave Americans. Brave ambassador, and they died. Listen, this is America. When you have sons and daughters and you know they're in harm's way and they're being attacked, do you want to know that your government's going to do everything to make sure they can survive? Hillary Clinton knew. She knew it was a terrorist attack. Why did she engage with the cover-up that the administration said this was an answer and a protest of a video? Why did she participate? Why? Why would somebody of this level of world knowledge, knowing that there was a terrorist attack, and she told everybody it was the video? It wasn't. We have been lied to. We've been cheated. We have been mistreated and abused by this administration.
What difference at this point does it make?
The American people deserve better. The parents and the families of these brave Americans who died, they deserve better. And I think about our men and women in the military now. If the president will not back up our troops in the field, if we will not back up our State Department in the field, how can those who are engaged now in our nation's business in harmful territories and places, how can they have trust in our Commander-in-Chief? And we go back to what we asked back in October of 2012. Did these brave Americans die so that our president could be reelected? That's a tough question. And a question is there a cover-up involved to keep the American people from knowing the truth? And Greg Hicks and others have come forward. I pray that others will be brave enough to come forward and write out this story that we don't know. Who changed the talking points? Who? Who gave the orders to stand down and not go help these brave Americans under fire? We need some answers, and I hope we get them soon. And that's the Benghazi hearings of last week. We could go in much more detail. Maybe we'll get to it next week. But I wanted to share that with you. This is such an important moment in American history. Can we trust the White House? Can we trust the administration? And can we trust our commander-in-chief? Where was he? Where was he during this time of the attack on the embassy? What was he doing? What's his schedule? Nobody knows. We haven't been told. We have not been told. It's time we know. Now it's time to shift gears. I know it was a heavy moment talking about Benghazi and four brave Americans who died, and we didn't know why they died. But now we're going back into our show that I told you. I asked two questions right on the front. And one question is, who is our guest great-great-great-uncle? Well, Joshua Waller's coming on. He is the great-great-great-nephew of Mark Twain. He wrote Innocents Abroad in the late 1860s. Became a bestseller. And he talked about the poor, poverty, just desolate land outside of Jerusalem. It's a nasty, hot place, folks, in the 1860s. And it had been. But we're going to talk to Joshua Waller in just a minute. And we're going to find out what's going on there in the land of Israel in the West Bank, where the Palestinians have many communities, as well as the Israelis. And it's not a marked line. There's a lot of communities that are pepper and salted across some land there. So we're going to find out about that. And also, I ask you, if the Democrats win back the House in 2014, which President Barack Obama is intensely working on with his reelection team that he got reelected by, you think they went home and partied? Nope, they're working to get him in power, to give him more power by making sure Nancy Pelosi is elevated to Speaker of the House by winning in 2014. But guess what? Who's going to be head of the Finance Committee? We had a Dodd-Frank bill that came through. Barney Frank is no longer in the House, no longer a member of Congress. And guess what? We have the socialist, Marxist, Maxine Waters, the one told the oil companies, we'll take over you like they did in Venezuela. Well, she'll be the chairperson of the Finance Committee. Maxine Waters, look forward to her being chairperson if Nancy Pelosi becomes Speaker of the House. How about you? You feel safe if your money in the bank with Maxine Waters, who said that Congress would take over all the oil companies if they didn't do what they wanted them to at one time in congressional testimony? She said a lot of things over the years, enough that it might sink the markets just thinking if she was the chairperson of the House Finance Committee. Let's move on with today's show. We're going to call up, we're not calling up. We got Joshua Waller coming right in live in the studio. We don't usually have a guest right here live, but that's what we're going to have. And before he comes in, let me just remind you, you're listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You're listening to us on webtalkradio.net. We've just talked about Benghazi, and we're about to interview Joshua Waller. He's from a family that farms in Tennessee. Not only did they farm, they didn't start out as farmers. They were just regular, everyday meal Americans. I think his dad worked for UPS, and then one day he decided that's not what they wanted, they needed. And they went back to the ground, the soil, and they lived with the Amish. Didn't become Amish, but lived like Amish and learned how to farm. And about 10 years ago, his father had this, I guess you could get a calling, but he felt like he needed to go work with the Jewish people, the Jewish farmers in the Holy Land. He just felt called to do that. And took his family, his large family, and they helped and do help the Jewish farmers. Now they take other people to help harvest the crops during the harvest season. And so we're going to talk to him. And before we do that, I'm just going to remind you that Freedom Works is the grassroots organization that we think you need to be a part of, because they're on top of all these things that are going on as the leftist, socialist, push all these things. We got grassroots helpers all across America fighting back, trying to hold a line and move things forward because of people like those who work at Freedom Works. Go on Freedom Works on my homepage there. Click on Matt Kibbe and go to freedomworks.org. Find out what you can do to help get this country moving back in the direction of freedom. Now, Joshua Waller, come on over. Let's talk. All right, on Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, right here live in the studios, we have Joshua Waller. Now, what does Joshua Waller do? Well, he's part of a family that's moved from Tennessee that spends a lot of time in the nation of Israel now. And why does he do that? Well, let's ask Joshua. Why do you spend so much time in Israel, Joshua?
My dad actually started an organization called Hayovel back in 2004. Been going back and forth ever since. We're there. We've been serving the Jewish farmers. It's exciting stuff going on over there. We've been privileged to harvest and prune and be a part of the farming communities, and exciting things. Started out as a family organization back in 2004. Now it's kind of grown from a family organization to now we've brought over 1,000 people into the West Bank area, Judea and Samaria region of Israel, just to go in there and be a blessing and serve these Jewish farmers.
Well, you talk about serving the Jewish farmers, Joshua, and of course one thing, you've been there for several years on ongoing basis with your family, and what do you see? We're looking at 2013 now. We got President Obama in his second administration, and what do we see in these years with the United States government and what they're trying to lead Israel into a peace process? Does that mean they have to give up land? And what do you see on the ground right there in Israel?
Well, I'll tell you, it is interesting looking on the political side of things, how Judea and Samaria seems to be like the kind of the hot point for a lot of stuff going on. Just being there in the mountains and seeing the people and being right in the middle of it for going on 9 years now, to me, it's a lot of talk, and I don't see anything ever happen. There's about 700,000 people living in that region of a country of just over, just getting close to 7 million now. That's really kind of impossible to think about moving all those Israelis out and making the two-state solution. I don't know what the solution is, but I know one thing, that won't work.
Well, you're talking about this farmland before you came, and the land that's being farmed now, is it new land being farmed, or is it just the farm's been there for hundreds of years?
This is a totally new thing. Actually, it's cool. The history of Israel goes back 1,800 years ago, it's laid desolate for that 1,800 years. And now just in the year of, I guess, about 2000, the farming just has begun to pick up. So it's amazing to see this land was totally desolate. I mean, totally desolate. You look back, my great-great-uncle, Mark Twain, traveled the land of Israel back in, I think it was 1867. Went throughout, and he came back, and he wrote all of his stories in a book called, I think it's Innocents Abroad. He wrote that book, and describes it totally barren. I mean, nothing. No people, hardly anything in the whole land. And now you go there, and you see what's happened over the last 25 years, really, has been tremendous in that region right there. It's totally grown. I mean, you've got hundreds of acres of vineyards now and olive groves. I mean, probably going on thousands of acres of olive groves now. There's olives everywhere, and it's the farming is brand new to the area, but it's taken off like wildfire. So
when you talk about farming new to the area, there has to be a reason. It was desert, it's dry. Now, how in the world can you grow something in the desert? Is it new techniques? Or the Israelis have some kind of special secret we don't know? Or what's going on right there, Joshua?
Well, if you ask me as a Bible-believing Christian, I think that it has a little bit to do with the promise that God made to Abraham back in Genesis, where he talked about to Abraham, he said, to you and your descendants, I'm going to give this land. So it seems pretty laid out to me that once you get the right people in the land, it's going to start flourishing. But that's just what I think. Now, I'm sure a lot of people have different opinions on that one, but I think it's a God thing. He says, you guys come back, and there's prophecies all about that in the Bible. We're talking about how the prophecies of the restoration of the land, and how when the people of Israel returned, just like they did in 1948, and then into this area, 1967, the Jewish people came back in, and immediately you started to see the growth of the land again.
We say the growth of the land, and you're talking about the West Bank area. This is after 1967. This is land that was captured after the 67 war. And we say the word captured, some people say enlarged, but this is the land that you said 700,000 people approximately live there now. How many of that is Jewish? How much is that Arab?
Of the West Bank area, you're talking about 700,000 Jewish people in that area. And you're talking around over a million of that is Arab. So you've got a real serious, you've got, in the communities there, it's pretty amazing. You've got, it's like salt and pepper. You've got a Jewish community, you've got an Arab community, you've got Jewish, Arab, all over the whole region. Now, the amazing thing is that about just over 40% of that land is totally empty. So you hear people talking about all the time how the land, it's this whole big, huge chaos of everything. But still, over 40% of that whole territory that everybody's talking about that's so disputed is empty. And so there's still a ton of room there. The conflict is definitely comes up here and there. I don't know the answer to how I'd say on the Jewish side, from the ones I work with, they actually, before the Intifadas back in 2000 and 2003, I believe, when the Intifadas came in, before that, the Jewish people that I work with and all over the region actually used to buy and sell in those Arab communities. And it wasn't until it got dangerous for them to buy and sell with these Arab communities that they quit. So really the whole thing that I see has happened is, won't ever happen, is the Arabs get a peace of mind and start being, they quit shooting each other and shooting their neighbors, then maybe there'll be some peace.
Well, one of the things you just told us was, it's not like there's one line with Jewish settlers on one side and Arabs on the other side. You said there are different communities are all mixed in together, different separate communities, an Arab community and a Jewish community, but they're separated now. Is there conflict within these communities now? Do we see that? How is it separated? How is there peace on the West Bank?
Right now, it's actually, I've been there now for the 9 years, like I said, and I've seen very little conflict. I know the whole world is talking about it, and you'd think you walk into the West Bank, you'd see machine guns and people all over the place and bombs and all this. I haven't seen any of that. And I've been really involved. I've been walking the mountains and the hills and everywhere, out in the agriculture of it, in the city, everywhere in the whole place, hiked it all. And I've seen, the most I've ever seen is rock throwings, small things that nothing to what the media paints it as. Rock throwing's not that serious. And so that's what I've seen. And of course you hear the stories. Of course there's things happen throughout the area. Maybe, here and there you'll hear of a terrorist incident. Most of the time that's maybe once a year, even sometimes less than that. Over the past couple of years, there's been very, very little of terrorist activity inside the West Bank area. So, a lot of people have this picture of walking into a war zone when that's totally not the picture. I tell people all the time, Nashville, Tennessee, where I'm from, I'd rather be out in the West Bank any day than go into downtown Nashville. I mean, you take the stats off of downtown Nashville on how many murders and, robbings and all this stuff, does not compare, at all. I mean, you're talking about way more stuff happens, negative like that stuff, in Nashville than it ever would in the West Bank.
Well, Josh, that's a good point you make right there. People forget about it. You go to any inner city in the United States, a large city, and murders and all kind of things are just not reported, is not national news. You go in the West Bank, have one incident, and it goes around the world. But I appreciate you sharing that on the ground testimony, what's going on in the West Bank. Of course, some of our listeners may not understand the whole thing. The West Bank's controlled by the PLO part, but the Hamas controls Gaza, which that's, you're not near to Gaza. Well, you're not too far away. You can't be too far away anywhere in Israel from Gaza, but that's what we hear so many of the mortar fires, and that's coming from Gaza, where Hamas is in charge. They're the political and the entity that's in charge of the Gaza. But right now on the West Bank, it's the Jewish government and other people in the world governments are trying. That's where they try to make a peace treaty, working with the Palestinian leaders there on the West Bank. So that, I just want our listeners to understand, that's what you hear, two different things coming from the Hamas and then from the PLO. But do you see, what do you see as far as you've been there on the ground, and do you see anything other than, you said a while ago, talk, do you see anything other than talk going on in the next couple years? Josh, I better, before you answer that, let me just remind everybody, you're listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right here on webtalkradio.net. That's webtalkradio.net. We're talking to Joshua Waller. He's a family member of a large family that spends half the year in Israel, half the year in Tennessee, and they're farmers, and they help the farmers, the Jewish farmers over in on the West Bank. So now continue that thought.
I definitely don't see anything happen as far as a disengagement or a giving up of the land. I see that as being totally impossible. I don't see the PLO and all these organizations giving up either. I don't see that happening. So I don't know what it's going to look like. I know it's going to be, it's if the world's going to keep talking about it, that's for sure. It's going to keep excitement going. I don't know how it'll turn out, but I know that I'll be right in the middle of whatever's going on there, and we'll see. It's going to have to be seen to see what happens. I have no idea.
Well, you said you'll be right in the middle of it, so I take it you're going back to Israel, and you're planning on being there for a while. And I know if your family, you live in Tennessee, spend about half a year in Israel. Basically, that's about right. And you, one of the things that I think our listeners want to know, you do ask for people to come and help, and you help harvest the crops. And so tell a little bit about your organization, what you do, and if somebody wants to help out, how would they contact you?
What we do is we bring volunteers over to the land of Israel to serve in those farming communities we've been talking about. We go in the harvest seasons, September, October area, and we'll be there for that time frame. We'll help bring in the harvest, grapes, olives, anything we can get our hands on, pomegranates. Last year we had 200 volunteers out there, and we had a great time doing that, and everybody's invited to come out. Also, the pruning time, it's an all-men's trip. We go in the springtime, even maybe a little earlier, starting in February, and we'll spend some time there and having a great time, all guys, kicking about, having a good time out there, working in the fields. We also, don't worry, it's not all work. We get a lot of play and fun in there. We go and tour around the area. 85% of the Bible was written and occurred, like it happened right there in that area. 85% of it happened in the West Bank. So we spent a lot of our time going around and seeing all these sites that all this stuff happened in. So it's a packed, full, fun time to go and experience the land. Everybody talks about going and walking the land that the people of the Bible walked and Jesus walked and stuff. And there's no part of the land that you can walk like this part. And the wild thing is that nobody ever goes there because of the media. They're all scared to death, like we were talking about earlier.
Okay, Joshua, you tell us about what you do with the harvest, but you do have a website. Tell us about your website where people can find out more about what you're doing.
Yep, that's for sure. You can go on the website. It's www.hayovel.com. You can go on there on the front page of the website. You can scroll down a little bit, and you'll see volunteer. Click on volunteer, and that'll pull up all the information for you to be able to send your application in, and we'd love to see you over. It's an amazing experience.
Well, now, you said you were your uncle, your great 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 uncle was Mark Twain, and I have read Innocents Abroad, and if anybody hasn't, you can easily probably get that if you got a Amazon Kindle or something. You probably read it for free now, but a lot of good things in there. But he did. I remember your great 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 uncle talking about how poor and rugged and ragged that the Holy Land was in bad shape. And it's amazing here. You are three or four generations from your uncle, and you're seeing the desert bloom. And it seems like there's a Bible verse goes along with that too, isn't there?
Yeah, it's been amazing to see, being that it was awesome to search back in the line and see this relation there and seeing how he had, Mark Twain, had went to the land and seen this and came back and gave this report to the world pretty much. And now having the opportunity myself to go and kind of be the same voice, you know, to go out, and now we're out on these tours traveling all over the world now and sharing about what we've seen from the land. So it's an awesome experience to be able to tell people what's actually going on. You know, you hear all this different stuff. You hear everything. The whole world's looking at Israel, talking about everything. You know, most of it is, you know, you never know what's what to believe and what not to. But it's good to be on the front lines of actually seeing it myself and then being able to tell people the truth about what's going on in the land. So,
well, we appreciate you coming on Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. It's not every day we get somebody sit live in our studio and tell us exactly what's going on the West Bank in the nation of Israel. The world wants to know, and you hear all kind of news organizations, but we're getting an exclusive right here on Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. Anything you'd like to tell us about Israel that we may not know, something that we listen to the news, and we miss things, what's really going on, what's one thing you tell us about the West Bank that we don't know about?
I'd say this, and I kind of covered it before, but don't be afraid to come. That's the biggest question I've ever had all over the place, and that is, it's not a war-torn zone. You're not going to see M16s everywhere. There ain't a bunch of gunshots going off all the time. Prepared to experience the Bible like you never have in your life, to see things come alive to you, where this 85% of it was happened right there in front of you. Prepare to be really changed, and you're gonna see so many things that you've never seen before. So that's what I'd say. Come on and don't be afraid.
That's Joshua Waller giving us a perspective on the West Bank and the land of Israel, Palestinian land claims, and guess what? That's another Doc Holliday exclusive right here on Rock Splitting Politics. You're not going to hear Joshua anywhere else give the detail like you got right here, and I'm glad you're listening. That's going to be today's show. We're not going to do a Tombstone of the Week award. We had this special time of Joshua, and we wanted to use that right here in the studio, and I did want to fill you in some on Benghazi. We'll get to some more Benghazi next week and immigration. So many things are happening we got to talk about, so be ready for next week. We got another exciting show. We'll pack it in, and you'll learn something here you won't learn anywhere else. We appreciate you listening to us. Go to our Facebook page, like us, and make sure you tell your friends and neighbors about Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. We're here to make sure you hear the stories that need to be told and other people aren't doing it. We are here. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Thanks for joining us today, and remember to listen again next week for another edition of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You can order Ed's new book, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, Tea Party versus the Status Quo, by clicking on the book cover right in front of you on the screen. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.